Welcome to the Original Gangsters Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bernstein. We have a very special edition with a very special guest. We're going to do our standard life and crimes episode. We're going to focus on recently deceased, the legendary New England Mafia Don Luigi Baby Shaq's Minocchio. And we're going to bring on the expert of all experts when it comes to the mafia in New England and Providence, Steve O'Donnell, who is just one of the true great mob busters, in this era of American, cowboys and Indians between the La Cosa Nostra and law enforcement in this country. Steve's been with us on a couple occasions. He's a huge friend of the show. And like I said, there's nobody that knows Baby Shaq's or knew Baby Shaq's from a law enforcement perspective more than Steve. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, you're welcome. I hope you guys are well.
So, I mean, let's just jump in, real quick. I guess the first question is, what's the legacy? 97 years old, was boss for a decade and a half, really brought the family back, stabilized the family after all the craziness in the late 80s and 90s.
Depends how you look at it. So first I'd mention, anybody listening, is, your condolences to his family. He is, a human being that left a brother behind. He has a daughter and any of his friends and family that like him and respect him. So that's the first thing, someone's passing. Hopefully that, somewhere in that process, he's, in a better place. So with that said, I think there's just always misnomer. It's this romanticized piece where, I'd like to see someone, take like a state police colonel or the FBI director or chief of police somewhere that, gets referred to as legendary. So in his world, I think it's clear he's a legend in the organized crime world. But, this, and make no mistake about it, that, if you are aspire to that type of position, you are a purveyor of misery. What that means is that you had to be involved in killings and surviving that all the way up. So as a leader of that organization, he did a good job. But remembering he's running an organized criminal racketeering enterprise.
Yes, lifelong criminal and somebody that I don't have any hesitation saying participated in and greenlit multiple gangland homicides. I know he was convicted of, we can talk about that in a second, Marfeo and the Mele, Marfeo and how do you spell that? Was it Anthony?
Marfeo and Mele.
Marfeo and Mele was eventually cut loose from it. Also had a case kind of hanging over his head at the end of his life for allegedly ordering and helping facilitate the 1992 murder of Kevin Hanrahan. So, yes, I don't think he was definitely not a Boy Scout, but was more polished than your average mafiosi.
Yeah, so to give him credit, that he deserves, so to speak, running, credit enterprise. So it's that cat and mouse game between law enforcement and, the organization he runs. He knew it from the get-go. So just historical perspective, I grew up in the adjoining neighborhood to where he held court. It's in Rhode Island, it's Providence, it's Mount Pleasant. He was on Atwells Avenue, which is Federal Hill. So they butt neighborhoods. So everybody knows who he is as a young kid growing up, high school kid. I knew, everybody knows who Louis Minocchio is. You know all the players just because you're around their children or even grandchildren. That's just the nature of neighborhoods back then. So I got to know him in prison, believe it or not. So in 1983, I was a correction officer at what they call the Adult Correctional Institution, maximum security. Junior officer, 3 to 11 shift, PQR. That was my block. PQR is just the letters PQR and the cell blocks PQR. They elevate. Louis Minocchio was in that cell block with Rudolph Sciarra and Harold Tillinghast. And so you have no alternative but to talk to these guys. And prisons are kind of a interesting place where when you work there, it's just like you and I talking. They talk to you. They're not going to tell you any secrets. But you can communicate with them. Most of the time, they're gentlemen. They scam the system, and they had different privileges in the prison. Everybody knows who they are. You know, Rudolf Sciarra is also in prison. Rudolf and Louis were at the time doing prison time for the murder of
Rudy Maffeo and Anthony Mele.
Rudolf Maffeo and Anthony Mele. So, and having conversations with him, you know, understanding who he is. The first time I saw him, he was in the transition area, which is when you come into prison, there's like a dual locking system where you come in, you come out. And he's standing there with a briefcase and a suit on. I thought he was a lawyer because that's where the lawyers gather. Obviously, he wasn't. He was going to court. And you'd have conversations with him every day like you do with every other inmate. And you talked about different things. And, you know, as a 23-year-old, you know, novice, so to speak, you know, you're around this guy. He's not the mob boss, but he certainly is revered in the prison system. Everybody knows who he is. Nobody messes with him. He basically does whatever he wants to do. And I don't mean he violates any rules. He just operates by himself, and he's respected and feared. So you talk to him in conversations about getting out of prison. And he used to say, why not fly a helicopter into prison, believe it or not? Like it was happening in the early 80s. He says, I'll be out legally in a couple of years. And what I didn't know at the time, when he got charged, he disappeared. And then he was in France, he was in Italy, sometimes in New York. And he came back and he surrendered 9 years later because he knew then that the star witness had Alzheimer's. His name's Red Kelly. So Red Kelly got caught in a lie, or I'm not sure he got caught in a lie more than his brain just didn't operate the way it was. So that was his way of getting out of prison. And, you know, he got his case, you know, time served, and he walked out the door. So that started like a legendary process where, you know, if you get away with murder, John Gotti's, it kind of elevates your statute in the criminal world that you've kind of beat the system. It's just interesting. He hits the street, and then, you know, then we have history. When I left the corrections, I became a local police officer, then a state trooper. And then when I became a state police detective, working, you know, organized crime, Louis is a ranking member of that organization that is a natural target of the unit that I worked in.
Well, and I guess this might be a leading question, but for lack of a better legal term, it seems like part of the mythology that was built around Louis was the fact that he did take off for a decade and he wasn't necessarily laying low. He was on the other side of the pond, if you will, kind of gallivanting throughout Europe and kind of absorbing culture, learning to speak different languages. He picked up a love of skiing, skiing the Alps, Swiss Alps. And it seemed like you hear a lot of stories about, oh, this guy went on the run and he's on a beach, or went on the run and did something that's like come out of a movie. But in reality, most guys that disappear, they're not living glamorous lives across the pond. So do you think that kind of added a little bit to the cachet that Baby Shaq's had when he came back?
It does. And plus, at that time, there was some corruption within the system. Supreme Court justice was connected to him and others. And he was connected to a bank that went under. We had a guy named Joe Malacone. His father run this bank called Heritage Loan and Investment. The bank went under. That was really Louis' bank. And that's the way it, and that created a crisis in Rhode Island that no one's ever seen, where our banks closed. The governor of the state of Rhode Island closed all the lending institutions. It changed how we banked in Rhode Island. We had credit unions, the federal government stepped in. They could be insured. They weren't insured anymore. People losing money. Yet armed police at the banks because they were closed and people were pissed. So my point is, he had the ability to be hidden. He wasn't Louis Menache when he was on the lam. He had different identities. He blended in. He's a regular looking person. You know, just like Woody Bulger. You know, everybody thought, how did Woody Bulger disappear for a while?
So, right. They thought he was in Europe, and he was in living in a little crappy apartment in Santa Monica, not ever going out.
Right. So just remember, you know, not nondescript. If he's not getting arrested, and Illuminati isn't I would say it like a street criminal. And, I'll go back because I mentioned this the other day talking to locally to our media about this. I say, make no mistake about it, at the core of organized crime, you're a thief. I say that again, the core of it is you're a thief. And so think about this. Louis Menachio got arrested in the 90s for a stolen refrigerator, stolen washing machine.
He gave to his mom, right?
Yeah, and it was what happened was one of our detectives had worked a long case tracking career criminals. It really an unbelievable case, an unbelievable job by this particular detective. But they had a refrigerator and a stove that was stolen in Louis's mom's house. And so Louis was pretty pissed off, is the best way to describe it. And he went to the house and said, what are we doing? And he took responsibility for the stolen things. So it was older, I think 90-year-old mother wouldn't get charged. The point is this, Louis Menachio became a mob boss. He was the mob boss, access to money, access to people with money. And at the core, instead of paying for a refrigerator and a stove, he allowed stolen ones to come in because that's the core of really what all of them are about. They can steal a dime, and then he gets indicted and convicted of shaking the strip clubs down. Now, typically, as you know this, you get a maid guy, lieutenant, captain, underboss, boss.
The boss ain't sitting with the strip club owner saying, give me your money.
He's four parties removed in an insular hierarchical structure. But because he was a maid guy, he skimmed. So what happens is strip club pays a lieutenant, say $5,000 a month. Then that lieutenant whacks it up. He gives the captain $4,000. Captain takes $1,000. You have the underboss, say $3,000. Underboss takes five, and the boss gets 2,500. So Louis did that. They steal from each other. So he knew that was happening. So he went directly to four ranks below and accepted the money. That's how he got caught. So right. I think it's important in this particular case to understand the core of these people is most of them, if not all, are thieves, beating the system. And because he elevated through the system and he beat the system internally, you know, they scam off each other. There's no honor among thieves. And then at the end of your career, you know, I tried to flip them. I think I told you this before, but follow my, I left the state police after 23 years as the deputy superintendent and became the U.S. Marshal in Rhode Island. So the District of Rhode Island appointed by President Obama. So when I left the state police, we're investigating Louis with the FBI and other partners in Providence Police. And then he gets indicted, gets arrested while I'm the U.S. Marshal. U.S. Marshals oversee the federal prisoners. Louis becomes a federal prisoner. So he comes into the cell block where I work. I go downstairs, see Louis. He's surprised to see me. You know, we have a very interesting conversation. He's always a gentleman to me. What are you doing here? And I told him I'm the U.S. Marshal, explained that I will be the one responsible for your well-being in prison and moving you, but you're 85. You're going to die in prison, and I can say this publicly, you're going to die in prison, and why don't you do what everybody else does? Frank Salemi did it. Bobby Luca did it. I'm telling him Sam Gravano did it, and he, with a straight face, said he used some different language that I won't use on a podcast, but he said, I'm not doing it. I'll die in prison. So this is kind of comical. So fast forward to now I leave the Marshal Service, and I go back to the state police at the governor's request to be the colonel. So Louis... Louis goes to prison. So 5.5 years later, Louis 90 plus, gets released from prison. So, you know, I speak to the media freely as the colonel of state police, and they asked me about Louis' release. And what else are you going to say? I said, look, he's hopefully Louis has seen the errors in his ways, and he's been rehabilitated. Now, I believe that as much as I believe that I'm going to be a millionaire. But, you know, that's the public statement from, you know, the position I held. I think it's a fair statement. So about a month later, I'm driving on Atwells Avenue in my SUV in uniform. I see Louis walking. As he got older, he used Spruce Street. He'd walk as I'm doing around Atwells Avenue. That was his exercise because he used to go to a golf course and walk or run 10 miles a day. So I pulled over, got talking to him. And mind you, it's a little bit of a traffic jam now because I'm kind of semi in the road. Nobody's beeping. So you have the state police superintendent and the mob boss talking, and people can see you. And he asked me specifically, he said, so you think I've been rehabilitated and I've seen the error of my ways? So we laughed. He reads the paper, and I said, "Yeah, I wish you luck." Shook his hand, and you know, I moved on. So I say that respectfully because I respected him as an adversary, just like a sporting event. But I also know that there are a lot of people that don't feel that, you know, he should be glamorized or spoken, because you know there are people that either directly or indirectly, no matter if you like him or not, he's responsible for their death.
Yep.
And that's just the bottom line. So it's, as I mentioned with Stephen DeSaro and then with you before, I would think that Stephen DeSaro's family, you know, isn't too happy with, you know, Bobby DeLuca or Joe DeLuca, you know, for being, and Salemi's for what they're involved in. Some people think, you know, you get into that life, you get what's coming to you, but nobody's got that, the right to kill somebody, you know, or think about purveyors of misery, you know, gambling people that owe money. And they owe money because they're addicted and they just suck the money out of you. Or like DeSaro, they're going to suck his business out of him. In order to survive, I don't mean physically survive, but not lose your shirt, you have to compromise something. Loan, scam the banks, do something criminal in order to just keep paying them. Because the bottom line is their job is to exploit, you know, money, make money. That's why they're all over cash businesses. We could probably go on and on and ever so.
Oh, this is awesome. Let's just go back a little bit to go forward. So like you said, you know, Louis was a born and bred Rhode Islander, and he was somebody that was a U.S. military veteran. I think he served in the Korean War or around that time, was in the 50s, was in the U.S. military. Came out, I think pretty early on people knew the trajectory that he was on. Now you can correct me if I'm wrong. And then in the 60s, there were a couple situations. One where there was a shootout where he was wounded and survived it, got clipped in the neck. And then there was what we mentioned a couple minutes ago, the double homicide in Silver Lake, of Rudy Marfeo and his bodyguard, Anthony Mele. Nobody accused Louis of being the trigger man on that, but he was accused of being a part of the conspiracy. And I guess Marfeo was not paying tribute to Raymond Patriarca, the Don at that point. And then subsequently, Louis goes on the run for 10 years. So can you maybe comment a little bit on the Marfeo Mele case, and if you know anything about the shootout?
Yeah, it's before my time, but obviously I'm pretty well read. To answer your question, yes. So he was shaken down. Mafio Mele was the bodyguard, supposedly because Mayo knew there was a beef going, and it was just a crazy shootout. There was another shootout with a guy named Joe Schiavone that he was involved in. You know, back in the day, like the Wild West on Atwoods Avenue is what he was involved in. And so it's not like when he said publicly that, you know, he's basically pleading guilty for the deeds of others. It might not be the deed he committed then, but he was involved in a lot of, and that's the only way back then to aspire to leadership, you know, in organized crime, because most of them were trying to impress Raymond Sr., you know, that we're tougher than you, we're not tougher than him, but that they'll do whatever they think's necessary. Typically killing a bookie is never a good idea because you want their money. But if, you know, at that point, if they're not going to pay, it's the message they send to all the others that you got to keep paying or you're going to die. So in thinking about Mafio having Mele protect him, you know, that didn't work out so well for him because he's just unintended consequences of getting in the way.
Were they in a grocery store or something? Where did they get killed?
Yeah, in Pocasset Avenue, which is at the time, Pocasset Avenue, there's all these different streets that had different mob factions on them. Pocasset Avenue is, say, the west end of Providence. Almost into Cranston.
So he takes off, and another rumor I want to throw at you, and I have no idea the validity of it, but at the same time Cadillac Frank Salemi takes off, he was gone for a shorter period of time, but still, you know, years. And I've heard or read or seen informant documentation alluding to the fact that possibly Salemi and Minocchio, who would in the future lead the patriarchal crime family together as boss and underboss, Salemi being the boss and Louis being his underboss, before Louis ascended to replace Cadillac Frank, that they had, when they were on the run, possibly been roommates in New York for a certain time and kind of bonded together, dodging arrest?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you factually, but from court records and, you know, source information, is that their relationship developed pretty strongly because they hung out together, kind of like, as you call it, on the lam. But Frank and Louis couldn't have been, I mean,
right, more opposite.
Yeah, that, yes and no. So yes, in personality, but the, you know, like Frank would just probably claw your eyes out and maybe gouge your eyes out, then shoot you 10 times. Louis would set it up differently and try and get away. Frank would stand there and like say, I did it. So two right. different brands.
Jump back to end of 95. Frank Salemi is apprehended after being on the run, and his brother, Jack, took over briefly. He died recently. And Louis, who had been the underboss since 89, 90, takes over as boss. And one, I want to just set this up and then turn it over to you to just comment on it. First, he, you know, destabilizes things. It had been very tumultuous with Salemi, as you mentioned before. He was a guy that was a real lightning rod. He had his hardcore loyalists, and then he had a lot of people that wanted to kill him. And sometimes the loyalists became guys that wanted to kill him, and sometimes loyalists became guys he wanted to kill. And there was just a lot. There was a lot of a mess. There was a big mess to clean up. And as you also said, Louis is a guy that presents a little differently than Frank Salemi, a little bit more, a little quieter, goes about things a little bit more low key. I think had a little bit more respect, you know, coast to coast. And so he takes over and things kind of tamp down a little bit. And at the same time, he allows the D'Annunzio brothers, who had been from the East Boston faction of the Patriarchas and had been chased out of New England, had murder contracts on their head, went out to Vegas and Los Angeles, worked for the Chicago mob, and then a guy named Al Rapolo, who was a Connecticut wise guy that was working for the outfit, from my reporting, gets with Louis and gets these guys back to New England, and Louis makes them, and very shortly, you know, within 5 years, they're ascending, and eventually they would take over the family. They run the family today. But Louis was pretty integral in bringing them back into the fold. So can you kind of talk about Louis taking over, the change in mindset of maybe the family and the guys that were under him, and you were on the street around that time working undercover, and then how did people receive the D'Annunzios when they came back onto the scene?
No, it's a great question. So let's go back one step. So you remember Frank and Louis uncovered a murder plot from...
Right. So this is right with Hanrahan.
So Kevin Hanrahan, who is, lack of a better term, a hitman, he was surveilling Salemi and surveilling Louis. And both had seen him, and they at the time didn't know his plan, but they later found out that he had a plan to run the bomb Cafe Euro, which was Louis' place, and kill both of them. So they got wind of it, and Kevin Hanrahan got killed on Atwoods Avenue on the anniversary of the death of Raymond Slick Vecchio, done intentionally that day. So the blame would go right on to the Vecchio family or the natural suspects when it was not them.
And Hanrahan had been allegedly a hitter in the Vecchio case.
Yeah, he killed Raymond Slick Vecchio in Vincent's restaurant.
Right. So,
and that had been unsolved. Vecchios have a big family, very well connected to the Patriarchas, and that was never avenged. So someone's put a stop to that, said he's off limits, because he was close to Kevin. Was a loyalist for, you know, we have a good, solid killer that's a loyalist, but You know, when you're trying to take out a mob boss, they decided he's got to go. And it's an unsolved homicide. Bobby DeLuca, in court records, you know, he said who did it, but most of them, if not all of them, are dead. And Bobby DeLuca's word, as you know, they found out that Bobby had lied about some things. So
yeah, they couldn't rely, they couldn't build the case just against Louis and against, I mean, it's out there, Eddie Lato and Rocco Argenti. They couldn't build that case really just based on Bobby DeLuca.
Exactly. And Rocco passed. So back to Louis. So when Louis became the boss, part of it is, you know, his historical perspective earned his bones, so to speak. And then the Dunzios had a really good handle on some of the players up in Boston. And so Louis was the fixer, in the sense that Louis, it's better than fighting with them. Let's bring them on board. Kind of the sort of like after the induction ceremony. Let's, you know, they're shooting at each other. Let's do this without violence.
And they were huge. I mean, they were huge earners. So I'm sure that that's something that helped Louis gain a place in his heart, was because he knew if he brought him back, he'd be getting a piece of what they were doing.
Exactly. And that's really what it comes down to. As I said, it comes down to their face, but it comes down to they just want them making money. And however they make it. So if the Nunzos can do it and they're loyal to Louis, I don't think he felt them as a threat to Louis. I think Louis certainly portrayed himself as the upper hand. And, you know, Louis calmed the New England coast and Ostrich down, well regarded. So it's not like a pick that just resonated terribly through New England. So he oversaw it for a period of time until he decided that he wanted to leave, and you know, the rest is history. Now, he didn't. He left. Typically, you go to jail or you die, but they let him move on. You know, he's getting older, and then gets prosecuted, gets out of prison, and then he lives another 6.5 years.
So he steps down, and just to give people the timeline, he steps down, takes over in like late 95, early 96, steps down in 09 to go kind of retire to Florida for the winter, but is indicted pretty quickly thereafter and has to go to prison for about 5 years, comes out in 15.
Yeah, 2011 or so, he went to prison for 3.5 years.
4 years, yeah, 3.5 years.
So, you know, that's it's the nature of the beast. Historically, our boss would go to jail and run it from the prison, but those days really ended. It's just not effective. And then you have too many factions, and you don't have that power base.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the belief is that he gave the family over to Pete Doc Lamoni in Boston, who, you know, we can do a whole 5 episodes on him. He, went away to prison for 30 years for a murder he allegedly wasn't involved in, came out, got $100 million from the state, but returned to La Cosa Nostra, took over for Louis for a bit, and then from Lamoni, it's allegedly has gone to Carmen and Anthony DeNunzio.
That's what we hear. And again, I'm not a practitioner anymore, but I still talk to people that tell me those are the things. So the difference is what's going to happen now with Louis gone, Eddie gone. You know, who's the next person in Rhode Island? Are they going to trust? You know, you got Matty out there. He's an older guy.
Matty ain't getting any younger.
Yeah, and he knows it too. In fact, he was Eddie's spot. He gave it to Eddie because he just didn't want the position. So are there newer people that got to get made? There's a handful of people that are made. Or is it Boston? And, you know, the power base, the listeners, Boston, boss, under boss, Providence, or vice versa. That's changed after Salemi flipped and Bobby flipped. You know, there was a lack of trust in Providence. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, when they meet and talk about who's going to move in, who's not going to move in, who wants to be in, who doesn't want to be in, you know, what they're going to be involved in. It just, it's like an ongoing saga, but I still think people should recognize it's a shell of what it was, but it's still there. It's an organized criminal group. It's never going to go away unless, you know, they're all incarcerated, but I think the federal government, state police, local police have done, and prosecutors on both sides, done an unbelievable job in targeting them. Now, the Bureau, I think, just announced recently that they were going to be, this would not be, La Cosa Nostra would not be their number one priority, if you know that. This week, they announced. So people get off in arms, oh, they're going to give up on the mafia. And the answer is probably no. Not an FBI agent, but I can tell you the priority, unless you're asleep somewhere, for law enforcement is terrorism. Right. Internal, external, homegrown, extremists. They have to put their more resources to that. Now, it doesn't mean if that starts to grow, they won't put more resources. And it doesn't mean they're taking all their resources away, but they don't need the same amount of resources to police traditional La Costa Nostra. But by history, when you take your foot off that gas pedal, you know, if they have an opportunity to grow and expand, you know, law enforcement has to stay on top of that. And if they have to shift resources back to making that a priority, so be it. But generally, you know, state, locally, it's not the same priority as it was when it was announced that, you know, La Costa Nostra was public enemy number one.
And as we wrap up, let's just kind of go over Louis's last years. He comes out of prison. He went away when he was 84, 85, 86. He comes home and he's 90-ish. He's a guy you mentioned before, has always been a health nut, very active when he was, you know, able-bodied. There were stories about him doing these very extravagant ski trips and, you know, finding, difficult places to get to ski or to jog that he would arrange for himself. And a guy that always, you know, watched his diet and was somebody who would always be going to a lot of doctors to kind of monitor his health. So I know at the end he was living in like a veterans.
Bristol veterans home.
But as of the, until pretty late in his life, he was still able to kind of be out and about.
Yep, very active in his 90s. I think I told you I saw him when he's 90, you know, walking, you know, fairly briskly. So he's still walking to a place called Triggs. It's a golf course in the neighborhood I grew up in Mount Pleasant. And all the mainstream people that golf there see him, and everybody knows who he is. And so that's another lure of the mafia. You know, you see a guy jogging, he's the mob boss with nobody with him. He doesn't have a team. He doesn't have, it's not like a movie.
I not bringing bodyguards or security guards.
Nondescript car, drives home. But, you know, I don't think he had to worry about that. The only, I think, threat on his life was that one we officially know about is Hanrahan. So he was healthy up to about a year ago. And then he went into a nursing home at Bristol. Veterans home, and then I think he passed at a in hospice at the Veterans Hospital is what I was told.
So we talked on the phone about this, and you can either comment or not comment, but I broke a story back in the summer that the patriarchal family held what was kind of dubbed a living wake for Louis and Eddie, boss or former boss and underboss, both kind of knew that their time was winding down and they were going to die. Louis of just old age and Eddie was battling cancer. I was told that a lot of people convened at a restaurant in North Providence, guys from not just the patriarchs, but other families coming in to kind of pay their last respects. I kind of feel vindicated to a degree because I had some people giving me pushback on it, and I'm like, the fact that they both did pass in, you know, the 4 or 5 months after that took place, and I've heard it from enough people and from enough solid sources that that actually did happen. Do you have any kind of comment on that being done? It seems somewhat unique that would be done. I've heard regular people kind of doing living wakes. I've never heard of it from an organized crime perspective.
Yeah, no, as I told you earlier, I don't have knowledge of that because I'm, you know, I don't get, like I told you, briefings. If I wanted to find out, I'd just have a couple people I would call. But I did hear prior to Eddie dying, there was a group of people that are close to him that, you know, wanted to be with him before he passed. I haven't heard the Louis piece, but it's as simple as verifying if somebody I know would have that information. So. And remember, I'm not an active practitioner.
No. I'll just say, without giving away my source, I'll just say it's somebody that both Steve and I know pretty well and has always been spot on with their ability to garner inside information. So I, in addition to the other people I got it from, that this person that we both know and have worked with confirmed it for me, and or kind of tipped me off to it. So that's, you know, if you don't have anything to say, you don't have anything to say. Last thing would be.
Well, I'll just leave it at this, you know, so they do respect each other. I'll just tell you one last story about Louis. I forgot about this, but my closest friend's father was a doctor on Broadway, which is the street that's right behind Owls Avenue. Grew up with all these wise guys, and Raymond Patriarca was his patient. When I was a young boy, probably in a boy, go 20s, college, I went to my friend's father's physical. My friend's father dies. I go to the wake, and I'm sitting there, and I'm on the state police. I think I was in the intelligence unit. I think I was, and it closes at 8. So he's my closest friend's dad, so I'm staying with him and his brother and his sisters, just, you know, talking, and the door opens, and in walks Louis Menacchio. So, you know, no big deal. Sees me, knows me. I'm not undercover or anything like that. Sees Doug, which is my friend and their family, and gives his condolences. So he asked me, you know, what are you doing here? I said, this is my closest friend's father. He goes, oh, I figured you'd be in the bushes taking pictures of him. So it's just an interesting perspective on why he came at 8:30. He's probably thinking that police know the connection because he was hit one of his doctors, that the police are out there taking pictures. You know, that's their perspective of it. But they do have respect for some people is the best way to describe it. It's I wouldn't say it's odd. It's just there's some loyalty that goes with that, you know, not maybe because, you know, he was his doctor and stuff. So it's this, it's a good side of somebody like Louis, but keep that in mind that, you know, if you look at the history of 60 years, you know, so people perished, you know, directly or indirectly because of him.
So final question. We talked about Maddie, Maddie Googly and Maddie, good looking Maddie, Maddie Googs. Another guy that is, as Jerry Capasi would say, dyed in wool, gangster, a guy that kind of prides himself on just kind of having his finger on the pulse and being networked and being somebody that can kind of be the, you know, the, kind of the dual threat of somebody that can talk and is and get along with people and grease wheels, but is also tough and people know not to mess with. And he's somebody that has a lot of respect. He's kind of the last man standing in terms of the OGs in Providence. He's getting up on, you know, he's in his mid to late 70s, been battling health issues of his own. I've heard rumors and talked to people that I trust that say that Maddie was allowed to, at some point in the last couple of years, bring in some of his own people. Now, you talked about how hearing that there had been talk of making ceremonies. Do you think, A, that that's true, and B, do you think if that was true, would Louis Menacchio have been present?
Not necessarily. So the answer to your first question would be yes. You know, Maddie's got juice. He's well-respected, well-regarded. He's been around forever. He did his time, 10 years, released. And he was targeted for bid rigging, and he caught for drug dealing. So keep that in mind. But he has influence, and those that people have been made, there's a pretty close connection to a couple of them directly to him. Would Louis be there at a making ceremony? I doubt it. You know, if he's not the boss, you're not really, it's not where you should be. Right. Did someone ask him about those guys? Of course. I think they all respected his opinion. All those people that were made, you know, I think if Louis said no, I think it's a bad idea, that'd be a problem. But I don't think the ones that I know were made, they've been around the game for a while, and I think it was just their time. And keeping in mind, a lot of the made guys are dead, you know, if you
right.
Went to the list of, and then you got a made guy that paid his way in. So, you know, even though he's a made guy, they respect him as a made guy, they don't respect him because he never did the job.
Just talking to, you know, with a job, I have to interact with a lot of wise guys and law enforcement, you know, in different cities. And I've never really heard a negative word about Maddie in the realm of being a stand-up wise guy. Obviously, as we talked about Louis, these aren't regular people. They don't have regular jobs. They're at the core. These are criminals. But it seems like with the five families in New York, the guys in Philly, the guys in Jersey, guys in Connecticut, everybody loves Maddie. And so I guess even though he might be the last of the Mohicans, they're, you know, he's still there. He ain't gone yet. So as long as kind of he's kicking and holding, you know, he's the standard bearer for Providence. Providence is still going to have, is going to have, you know, weight. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Maddie's got, it doesn't matter what position he holds. He's probably the most respected guy in their group from a historical perspective. You know, and he knows, like prison, you know, he goes to prison for 10 years. The relationships develop in those prisons with other gangsters that get incarcerated. And that stuff gets around pretty good. It wouldn't surprise anybody, but prison system creates relationships because you're with them.
Yep.
So the answer is yes. I think he's got the gravitas and the respect of others outside of Patriarch. Because Patriarch crime family, based on the induction ceremony, you know, took a pretty good hit years ago. So guys like Maddie who lived through that are like the standard bearers, I think. That would be the best way to describe it.
Well, this, I kept you longer than I said I would. Steve, thank you for giving us your time, your expertise, your insight. You are always welcome back to come and talk Providence, New England, Boston, LCN. We always want to go to the source, and you are one of the best, if not the best, in the subject matter. So thank you so much, Steve O'Donnell. Yep.
You're welcome. And Ben, thanks for the work behind the scenes. Scott, always a pleasure.
Yes.
I don't see you guys. Merry Christmas.
Man, Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays to the whole audience. This was Life and Times of Louis Minocchio, dead at 97. I'm Scott Bernstein, OG Pod. For Steve O'Donnell and Benny behind the glass, we're out.